This storm has caused confusion and delay.
You have caused
confusion and delay.
I think you are face prejudice.
Daisy is just the ultimate thought. Daisy is just the ultimate thought.
Your impatience has caused confusion and delay.
Are you stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive! Been great today.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Deepest Lore. I'm here. And this stream has been some time in the making. It's been, I think we first had the idea when I had Sargon and Charlie on the cigar stream, and we reviewed the Conservative Manifesto by Peterson. That was last year, I think. I think it was in November or maybe even before then. On that stream, I had the idea, because it's so badly written, of doing basically like a kind of stream-long advertisement for my hit course, Foundations of Writing, which teaches you grammar, syntax, parts of speech, punctuation, basically how to write. One of the reasons that I set up the academic agency is because I think the basics, you know, writing, logic, rhetoric is part of the trivium as well. Just the ABCs are not being provided by the education system, certainly not in this country, but also in America as well. And I know this because I have marked hundreds, if not thousands, over the course of a decade of student essays, students who were English literature undergraduates. So, you know, in theory, in the top percentile of, you know, people who can write in the country. And essentially they just can't do it. And I also, during my career as an academic in the academy, taught American students who were a lot worse, I have to say. There was a gulf in standard between the American students and the British ones. And it's not simply a function of the institution, because a lot of the students I taught were exchange students who came from all over the United States. So, you know, a typical class would have, you know, one or two from Texas, a couple from New York, a couple from, like, they were from all over the place, red states and blue states, good universities, you know, some of them even Ivy League, and bad ones, because they were there basically for the summer, right? But as part of it, they pick up a few credits and they did my Shakespeare course. I take them to the theater and things like that. So, that was a portion of students who you'd imagine should be the best at writing. This even afflicts, it goes all the way up to master's and PhD level. Even some academics just cannot write for toffee, like even English lit ones cannot write. This is something I've always been very passionate about. And partly I'm passionate about it because I'll just let people trickle in here and explain, you know, why I'm doing this. I personally had to learn how to write again when I was doing my PhD, because my own supervisor forced me to do it. I'm not just saying this as a kind of flex or whatever, but I had the highest grade at my university for English literature for 86 years. And I couldn't write when I started my PhD. I also had a distinction from Oxford, and I still couldn't really write. Right. So, this was, and so when I sent my first chapter back after having basically been that sort of student, and it just came back covered, like, honestly, there wasn't a word, there wasn't a sentence, there wasn't a comma that he didn't mark in red ink, right? It was just covered from there wasn't any space on the page that didn't have red ink on it. And it was, and it kind of hit me. It was like I'd been shot or something, because, you know, you can imagine you're a straight A student, used to being top of the class, used to being, you know, amazing. And basically your supervisor's telling you, like, you can't write for shit, son. So that basically started a process where I had to learn how to write again from the ground up, like literally from the ABCs up. And I got really interested in this topic. You know, I got loads of grammar books. I got, I wanted to fix the problem. And I think I did. I over the course of doing my PhD, I fixed all of the problems in my own writing, to the point where, a lot of the publishers and stuff I've worked with before always comment on, you know, you write really well, you write clearly, you know, because they deal with this sort of stuff all the time. And that's probably one of the reasons why I have so many books, because, you know, when I write into the publisher, the fucking marketing board or whatever on the other end can actually understand what I'm saying, right? Because I use the principles of plain English and speaking and writing clearly, okay? So that is one of the reasons why I always tell people Foundations of Writing is the first course shit they should buy, if you're going to buy any course. And I also think that basically everybody could do with doing it, with actually taking the course, even if they're PhDs, right? Because a lot of the worst writing you'll see is actually done by academics. As we'll see, Jordan Peterson, you know, world leading psychologist. And honestly, this document is a travesty. So we'll have a look at that in a second. If you want to take part, because I thought that we might as well do it together, right? I have put the PDF in the show notes. And what you can do is, I'll just give people a chance to do this. I want you to download the Conservative Manifesto, the PDF, and then convert it to a Word file. You can do that by using an online, you're just on your browser or something. You can convert. You can just, you know, type into Google, convert PDF to Word, and you can, you know, you just upload the file. I used, what did I use? PDF2doc.com, and that did it after writing convert PDF to Word. Don't use Adobe's own one, because they try to get you to sign up to their stupid site and they want to flog you, Adobe software. So don't use them, but just use any of the other ones. Or some of you will have Adobe on your own. You can do it through the PDF reader as well in some cases. And if you want to buy Foundations of Writing, you go in the show notes, I've got buy courses here, and you can just click on academic agency, and you'll see Foundations of Writing in there. I'll stick it in the I'll stick Foundations of Writing in the chat. There you go. And because I want to encourage people to get this course, just for this stream, there's a 25% off sale using promo code MERIT.
Merit, pure merit, such merit. 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 merit, such merit, merit, such merit.
Oh, I thought. people asking, can you do your course on your iPhone? You can. You can do the course on the iPhone. In order to get through each of the thingies, there's a multiple choice. There's a multiple choice test after each lecture, and it's set so that you have to 100% those tests, because that is that is a test to see if you've really taken in the content. There are some writing exercises and stuff. I mean, you can just pull out an A4 pad and do that for yourself. I don't mark it or anything, but you can do it on your phone, although I have only ever used it on my desktop or laptop, and that's because I'm a boomer. it does work on smartphones. All right, so without further ado, then let us make a start. I have a hard finish here at 6 p.m. because after this show, I'm going to do a show with Lambda on his channel. I'll share the link when I haven't got a link for that yet. When I have the link, I'll share it. That's going to be about postmodernism. He could have had me to talk on to talk about anything. I noticed he had Aaron McIntyre on to talk about elite theory, but he had me on to all the topics. He wanted me to talk about postmodernism. So I will do that at 6 p.m. But now we're going to be, it will not run on a 1987 Macintosh C123, unless you can somehow get modern browser on a 1987 Macintosh and connect it to the internet. It shouldn't work. All right. So let us, I don't know if you can see that or if I need to make it big or whatever. Maybe I need to zoom in a bit to make it so that people can see. How do I zoom in? Zoom. Here we are. Should I make it 200? Now you can really see it, right? So here's the Peterson Manifesto. And I'll just explain some of the stuff I'm looking to do here. One of the things you'll learn about if you take Foundations of Writing is that I'm always looking to make sentences active rather than passive. So I want the kind of subject, verb, object structure of the sentence generally, right? The boy kicks the ball, not the ball was kicked by the boy. There's never really a reason to speak in that kind of passive, that passive voice. And this is something that the world of social sciences in particular loves to do, because the passive voice sounds objective and scientific. They're trying to hide the doer of the sentence. But actually what it does is that it makes it everything much more difficult to understand, because your brain is always looking for the doer of the verb, right? That is why clear active sentences are better than passive ones in general, okay? But that's not the only thing we're going to be looking for. One of the other problems in general with Peterson is that his sentences were very long and they were very verbose. So that means he's using too many words. So another thing we're going to be looking at trying to do is, wherever possible, maybe cut down these sentences, i.e. he could have a perfectly grammatically correct sentence that is active in the active voice and all the rest of it, but it's just too long. Like, by the time you reach the end of the sentence, your brain is switched off because there's too many words, right? That's something else we're going to look at in general. So once I've got five people in chat who are once I've got five people in chat who are ready and have it open, want to play along, I'll begin. As long as I've got five people who also have it open and are just ready to roll, okay? That would be good. If you press one, press one. I mean, it's not that I... It's not... All right, so there's one. Seamus has got it open. Now, Harry Evela, you have to remember, is in translation, but he was known for his Latinate, his kind of high Italian Latinate writing, even in Italian. So I would not hold up Evela as an example of good writing, right? Yes, and it's not that I don't like words. There's a place for, you know, a bit of flair here and there, but all too often, what our students did is that they'd highlight a word, right? They press Shift and F7 on it, pull up the thesaurus, and like stick a longer sounding word in. Never in the history of the world has somebody thought that somebody else was more intelligent because they use a longer word rather than a shorter word. In general, you want to go with the simplest possible word that gets you there in the smallest, in the smallest number of words. Okay, you want to write economically, and you want to get there, you know. Never use like 20 words when 5 will do. Okay. One of the things that having that as a general rule, you know, I'll just I will start in a minute, but one of the consequences of having that as a general guide is that it cuts down on the number of superfluous adjectives and adverbs, especially adverbs. I have a real kind of dislike of adverbs in general. And often when I'm writing, I have a lot of, because when you're writing quickly, you're kind of a bit conversational. And then when I'm going back through editing, I will often take out a lot of adverbs, you know, actually, basically, literally, like none of these words mean anything. You can just get rid of them. But even in cases where the adverb seems to be adding a meaning, you really have to ask, like, do I really need it there? Will it strengthen the sentence to have the adverb? From memory, I don't think Peterson has that as a problem in his writing, but in general, that is something I see a lot of, something I saw a lot of students do, is that they, you know, their sentences were laden with these words that just didn't need to be there, didn't add anything. All right, so let's make a start. And I've got, for the purposes of this, track changes here, so you can see where I've made a change. Okay. It says a profound crisis of meaning currently afflicts, destabilizes, and demoralizes. So we've got three main verbs here, which we have to count. So there's three different ideas in the sentence already. And this is something else I try to encourage people to do, is to think of a sentence as a discrete unit of thought that should carry one idea. Okay. Now he is layering up his verbs here. He's got three different verbs because he wants to hammer home what this the subject of the sentence is: the profound crisis of meaning. That is the thing that is afflicting us, destabilizing us, and demoralizing us. Okay, now, if I was writing this, I probably wouldn't load up the verbs as he's done there. But there's nothing technically wrong with this, right? It's a bit wordy, but I'm not going to change it because, you know, I don't want to change his meaning. And I feel like you need all three of them. Like he wants to talk about affliction, destabilization, and demoralization, right? There's three separate ideas, and he's loading them all up, but fine. Let's just let it roll. So a profound crisis of meaning currently afflicts, destabilizes, and demoralizes the sovereign citizens of the West and the social institutions upon which we depend. Okay, so far, even though it's a wordy sentence, there's nothing technically wrong with that. There's the subject. That's the doer of the verb there, the profound crisis of meaning. We've got currently, which is an adverb, but, you know, he's he's basically establishing that it's happening now. I mean, we could get rid of that. It may be stronger. A profound crisis of meaning afflicts, destabilizes, and demoralizes. But we don't necessarily... I mean, he could justify it in all sorts of ways. How do I undo in here? Hold on a minute. Undo. So, I mean, you know, it's not the sentence I would write, but I still think that he could justify even the currently, because maybe he's looking to change that, right? So the currently suggests that it might change in the future, something like this. Afflicts, destabilizes, and demoralizes with three main verbs of the sentence. And then the object are the sovereign citizens of the West. And then there's a second object, the social institutions upon which we depend. In fact, that entire clause there, that entire part of the sentence is the object, right? I mean, it's wordy, but it's correct, right? So I'm not going to change it. Okay. People are saying, well, what's a sovereign citizen? I mean, you know, he is trying to establish that the citizens of the West should be the ones in charge. So there's a bit of populist delusion in there. But remember, I am not editing this for content, purely for style. And, you know, that is one of Peterson's stronger sentences, I would say, because it's there's nothing wrong in it at all, really. The crisis has currently spread to the remainder of the world's people, generating confusion and sowing distrust. Okay, so far so good. Producing a counterproductive discord in place of the peaceful, voluntary cooperation and competition that could instead reign over and unite us. Okay. Again, it's not the sentence I would write. But, you know, other than being a bit wordy, it's still basically correct. I can't see any real problems. It's the crisis, that's the still the subject of the sentence, has increasingly spread, verb, to the remainder of the world, that's the preposition there too, which is basically telling us what the verb is directed at, and then the remainder of the world people, okay, and it has generated, the crisis this is, confusion and sown distrust, and it's produced a counterproductive discord in place of peaceful, voluntary cooperation and competition that could reign over and unite us. I mean, there's an argument to say that he could maybe split this up into three sentences here. That's one idea, right? That's a second idea, that the crisis has generated confusion and sown distrust. And the third idea is that it's produced counterproductive discord. I mean, it's a long sentence. It's a kind of Dickensian sentence, right? He doesn't need to put them all in one. But I am still willing to let it fly, right? In the overall scheme of things, it seems fine. That's what I would say. I don't know. If I was writing it, what would I say? Maybe something like... I would just say, like, the crisis has spread something like that. The crisis has spread. It has generated confusion, some distrust, something like that. I mean, you could rewrite it in you could make it more economic, I guess, but there's nothing really wrong with the way he's written it. I don't like using verbs like this, where you're running on from the main subject. You know, by the time you've got to producing, you're thinking, what is the thing that, oh yes, the crisis that's producing, your mind is having to go all the way back. So I would prefer to like reset the mind that the crisis has spread. It has generated confusion and sown distrust. And then you could say something like, it has produced something like that, maybe. But it's not necessarily, like, that's how I would write it. But the way he's done it is not wrong. That's why I'm not changing it, okay? Right, we're still riffing on the crisis. That crisis is, in the first place, the consequence of a corrosive doubt sowed. That crisis, in the first place, is consequence of a corrosive doubt sowed not least by the careless intellect regarding, you see, this is like so abstract. I mean, there are no people involved in the production of this sentence, right? I mean, the profound crisis that just exists, right, free of any actors, is in the first place, so there is an is there. Sorry. Sorry a minute. Let me just go back. That crisis is, in the first place, the consequence of corrosive doubt. Sowed not least by the careless intellect. The careless intellect of who? Regarding the value of the principles of value, aim and action that have heretofore inspired, guided, and stabilized us. What the fuck? Okay, this is going to have to change, I'm afraid. It just makes... It's so abstract. I'm having to think about how I would actually translate this into something intelligible. The consequence of a corrosive doubt. The value of the principles of value. Aim and action. I would say something like, I don't know, until now, the West has been guided by principles of value, aim and action, whatever the fuck that means, which have been cast into doubt by careless intellectuals, something like that. What the fuck is he trying to say? I just don't know. Until now, the West has been guided by principles of value, aim and action, which have been cast into doubt. I don't fucking know what he's trying to say. It's something like that. It's something like this that he's trying to say, which have been cast into doubt by careless intellectuals. This has produced the profound crisis of meaning. It's something like he's trying to say something like that. I mean, I don't pretend to know what he's talking about, right? But I don't know. I mean, you can tell me, is my sentence stronger than... is my sentence stronger than his? I don't know. Does mine make more sense? Until now, the West has been guided by principle. I mean, it's still a passive sentence, really. Would it be stronger to say something like, careless intellectuals have cast doubt on principles that have until now guided and stabilized the West. This is, how about that, friends? Careless intellectuals, they are the people responsible. That is the subject of the sentence. Careless intellectuals have cast doubts on the principles that have, until now, guided and stabilized the West. How about that? How about that? Yes. Careless intellectuals have cast doubt on the principles that have, until now, guided and stabilized the West. This has produced the profound crisis of meaning. Yes? More clear? Do you like it? Thank you. Thank you very much. And also note, I have completely deleted the value, aim, and action because I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. All we need to know is that the principles guided and stabilized the West. And now these twats have cast doubt on them. That's what he's trying to say. And this is the thing that is responsible for this crisis he keeps on talking about. I have injected people back into, like, actually people who are responsible are political enemies. Jordan Peterson's supposed political enemies are these careless intellectuals. Right? Thank you. Peterson, send me a check in the mail, please. He says that crisis is in the second place. Oh, fucking hell. He's still riffing on this, on the same. He says that crisis is in the second place. So that was just the first place. That crisis is in the second place. The consequence of the historically unprecedented realization of our ignorance about the ultimate source, nature, and reality of those principles, and our resultant inability to formulate and communicate a clear moral justification for their existence. Oh my God. We have forgotten why those principles existed in the first place. Something like that. Yes. Are people satisfied that that's what he's trying to say? Press yes if you think that that is correct. Yes, thank you. Okay. That crisis in the third place is the consequence of the presumptuous, premature, and finally narrowly self-serving insistence arising from... I can't stand this. Honestly, it's just torture. This is torture. This man is a world-class psychologist. One of the best-selling authors in the world. Oh, just... That crisis is in the third place the consequence of the presumptuous, premature, and finally, narrowly, two adverbs in a row, self-serving, insistence, arising from the doubt and ignorance that nothing but the will to power, the willingness and desire to dominate and exploit, motivates all individual perceptions and actions, and gives rise to and maintains all social institutions. This has arisen because people believe that the will to power, and we can keep his definition, the willingness to dominate and exploit. Still not very happy with this. How have I created that? What's happened there? This has arisen. I don't even like that. This is because people now, this is because people now believe the will to power, the willingness to exploit, to dominate, motivates sections and actions and gives rise to and maintains all social institutions. I mean, it's still wordy, but I just don't know what the fuck all this stuff is. Like, what is all of that? This is because. Right? I mean, this is what he's trying to say, ultimately. Are you happy with that? Is anybody not happy with that? Anyone happy with that? Okay, I think that'll do. And eventually, maybe when we come to the end, we'll just see what's left. You know, after I okay. That crisis. He's still, look, five paragraphs in now. He's still riffing on the crisis. That crisis is finally. Use of, oh, fucking hell. This crisis is finally use of the frustration and resentment that necessarily arises. That crisis is use of the frustration. That crisis is use of the frustration. What does that mean then? That crisis is use of the frustration and resentment that necessarily arises when doubt, ignorance, and intellectual pride combine to demonize, divide, and exploit. To insist upon an impossible and final conceptual certitude, and to demand recognition of a false and unearned moral virtue. I'm just trying to work out what he's trying to say. That crisis is... Let's just get rid of the ad. Just get rid of that minute. That crisis is use of the frustration. Use of... Bat Crisis uses. That crisis uses the frustration and resentment that necessarily arises when doubt, ignorance, and intellectual pride combine to demonize, divide, and exploit. Okay. To insist upon an impossible and final conceptual certitude, to demand recognition of a false and unearned moral virtue. That crisis uses the frustration and resentment We have forgotten why those principles existed in the first place. This is because people now believe that the will to power, willingness to come, motivates possessions and actions, gives rise and maintains all social institutions. Creates doubt. He's trying to say that the crisis, that frustration and resentment come out of the fact that I'm just going to say something like the result is frustration and resentment, something like that. The crisis of meaning phrase on this to demonize, divide, exploit. Is that what he's trying to say? I don't want to misappropriate what he's saying. Have I got this wrong? Is that right? He's trying to say that frustration and resentment come out of all of this stuff, right? And that the crisis that he's talking about uses that to demonize, divide, and exploit. It insists upon an impossible and final conceptual certitude It insists upon its own certainty. It demands recognition of its own moral virtue is unearned. I don't know if mine flows any better than his, but or if it means exactly the same as his. But at this point, I'm really struggling to understand what he's trying to say. Something like that. I think mine at least starts to make sense, right? If you read his so far, right? His is a profound meaning of certainty currently afflicts, blah, 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 blah. I have said Careless individuals have cast doubt on the principles that have, until now, guided and stabilized the West. This has produced the profound crisis of meaning, right, that he's talking about. We have forgotten why those principles existed in the first place. This is because people now believe that the will to power, the willingness to dominate and exploit, motivates perceptions and actions and gives rise and maintains all social institutions. The result is frustration and resentment. The crisis of meaning preys on this to demonize, divide, and exploit. It insists upon its own certainty. It demands recognition of its own moral virtue, which is unearned. I think that eliminates a lot of the confusion that Peterson creates in the first few paragraphs here. Whether it's, I mean, maybe it's very slightly changed, very slightly changed what he's trying to say, because I've added, I have basically made a causal connection where he didn't necessarily have one there, but I think it's the flavor of what he's trying to say, which is, you know, it's the gist of what he's trying to get at. And in fairness, his original is so badly written that it is difficult to say, but I reckon mine flows more nicely than his does, at the very least. Okay, let's carry on. That crisis manifests itself tool that he's trying to use doesn't really hit in the way that I think he wanted it to, right? Because it just, so I'm just getting rid of that device for clarity, because it doesn't work. It's not like the writing isn't good enough to carry that kind of rhetorical trope of the repetition, right? Okay, that crisis manifests itself in the idolatrous battles, simultaneously petty and terrible, that currently divide our world. In the disputes about identity that lead astray and render hopeless. Render who hopeless? Render what hopeless? Fucking hell. Crisis meaning manifests itself in the idolatrous battles. Why are the battles idolatrous? Disputes about identity that lead astray and render hopeless. Render what hopeless? There's something missing in the sentence, you see. You can't just stick a semicolon there. The semicolon stands, it is basically the end of a thought. So you can't just, if there's something that completes that later on, you know, the grammar's become unhinged. The syntax has just gone wrong. I don't know. The crisis of meaning creates divisions across the battlegrounds of... What the fuck are you trying to say, Peterson? Of identity, gender, race. What the fuck are you saying? In the stoking of suspicion between men and women, gender, race. So, I mean, that's what he's trying to say, something like that. Right? What, I mean, what is all this guff? crisis of meaning creates divisions. He wants to say they're petty and terrible. We can keep that for the flavor. Maybe we want to use his. The crisis of meaning creates petty and terrible battles. On the lines of identity, something like that. Is that what he wants to say? The crisis of meaning creates petty and terrible battles. Cross the lines of identity, something like that. Gender, race, sexuality. And the disputes about identity that lead astray and render hopeless. Lead astray and render hopeless. Stoking a suspicion between men and women. Insistence that amnesty must divide black, brown, and white. In the subjugation of the education that should enlighten to the ideologies that possess. In the cycle of accusation that threatens the trust upon which peace and prosperity necessarily depends. This is all one sentence, by the way. And in the panicked, anti-human, apocalyptic doomsaying that undermines the spirit of our sons and daughters. All right, let's break this down, because I want to create several sentences to get across what he's trying to say, right? The big idea is there are battlegrounds here, battles, and it's gender, race, and sexuality. That's basically what he's talking about, right? Have I smuggled in sexuality? And maybe even he doesn't even mention sexuality, so let's just say gender and race. Those are really the two he's talking about. These lead us astray. These battles lead us astray. These battles lead us astray. Creating hopelessness. I don't really like sentences like that, but it lead us astray, render our sons and daughters these battles lead us astray. They undermine the spirit of our sons and daughters, substituting trust. They undermine the spirit of our sons and daughters, substituting trust with apocalyptic doomsaying, feeling of hopelessness, something like that. I don't like it. I think it's. I'm just trying to unpack what he's trying to say. They subjugate education to. What are the ideologies that possess? What are you talking about? They subjugate education to ideology. Let's just say that. These battles lead us astray. I mean, we could do his semicolon business here like that, listing out the things that the battles that lead us astray do, something like that. Subjugate educational ideology, they escalate cycles of accusation. Oh, I don't know. I feel like it can't be saved, this bit. I'm getting very bogged down in this sentence here because it's just... Do you like mine? It's very difficult. The battles lead us astray. They undermine the spirit of our sons and daughters. Substituting trust with apocalyptic doomsaying and a feeling of hopelessness. Or I'll just say which renders them feeling hopeless, something like that. I don't like hopelessness. I don't like worthiness, you see. These battles lead us astray. They undermine the spirit of our sons and daughters, substituting trust with apocalyptic doomsaying, which renders them feeling hopeless. They subjugate education to ideology. They escalate cycles of accusation. They stoke suspicion. I mean, that's what he's trying. That is basically what this word salad here is trying to say in a nutshell. I don't know what panicked and anti-human, I don't know if he needs all of that. So let's just, you know, anti-human has a specific meaning in like Marxist theory. And I'm not convinced really that Peterson really means, I don't know if he really means it in that sense. So I feel safer just getting rid of it. Okay, let's carry on. Okay. I mean, just to explain, I have used the semicolon here as a listing device after a colon, right? This is the main sentence. These are all the things that, these are all the ways in which the battles lead us astray. They undermine the spirit of our sons and daughters. By substituting trust with apocalyptic doomsaying, which renders them feeling hopeless. They subjugate education to ideology. They escalate cycles of accusation, and they stoke suspicion. I mean, maybe we can put there if you like. So I'm just trying to convert what he said into a list with a causal chain there. These are all the examples of the ways in which the battles lead us astray. I think that gets across everything that he wants to say in this paragraph here. Just in fewer words with, you know, slightly better style. Again, it's not the sentence, it's not what I would write, period, right? So, okay, then he says, what can those who attempt to abide by and manifest a courageous faith in the traditional values of our past offer in such times? Right, now this is just a horrible formulation because the subject of the sentence, right, is... that. The subject is the subject phrase, if you want, in the syntax here is those who attempt to abide by and manifest a courageous faith in the traditional values of our past. It's very wordy. I'm just going to say old. I don't like his comma here. What can those who hold traditional values, obviously from the past, offer in such times? Happy with that? Does it need all the other guff? What can those who hold traditional values offer in such times? I mean, you could say, well, I've taken out his kind of rhetoric about the courageous faith or whatever. All right, you could say, if you want to maintain the flavor of his rhetoric, you could say something like, no, I don't like adverbs at the best times, but you could say, what can those who courageously hold traditional values offer in such times? That's an optional. I'll just put it in brackets there. Editor, book editor can decide. Okay. Personally, I think the sentence is stronger without the courageously. You just have the kind, like, if you're truly courageous, right, you don't need to call yourself courageous. If you've got faith, you don't need to, you know, it's pathetic. I mean, it's like, oh, what do those who attempt to abide by and men, I mean, just fucking shut up. What can those who hold traditional values offer in such times? End. Not the thoughtless and instrumental appeal to cynicism and bitterness associated with the insistence that our social and political institutions are fundamentally unreliable, corrupt, and untrustworthy. Okay, he's running on here. So this is just, again, these are rhetorical sentences. They don't make much grammatical sense because these thoughts aren't completing. Not the harsh and contaminatory exhortation or demand to accept and uphold a moral code noteworthy only for its joylessness, sterility, and tendency to forbid and damn. Oh no, not those. Instead, the confident and forthright transmission of the abandoned eternal verities to all those who currently wander, thirst, and starve in their absence. Jesus Christ. I mean, this is like I remember in Shakespeare, if you ever read Troilus and Cressida, right, there's a character in that called Nestor, who's always going on these long, rambling and verbose speeches, and people are kind of tune him out. This is, and obviously Shakespeare is pastiching that sort of person. This is like that. Or another character like that is Polonius in Hamlet. You know, he's long, rambling, verbose nonsense. So how are we going to turn all of this crap into something that makes sense? Let us try to convert this to something decent. So he's trying to say, not the thoughtless and instrumental appeal to cynicism and bitterness associated with the insistence. Yeah, so not that. Not the harsh and condemnatory exhortation or demand. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear. I just hate it. I hate the whole thing. Just hate the whole thing. I really hate it. Not the thoughtless and instrumental appeal to cynicism and bitterness. Blah, 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 blah. They can offer an alternative to cynicism and bitterness. I mean, what the fuck is he saying? It can offer an alternative to something like cynical and bitter view that our social and political institutions are unreliable. I don't like fundamentally corrupt and untrustworthy. Yes. I mean, is that what he's trying to say? Yes. You happy with that? Okay. And then another one. So that's the first sentence. They can offer an alternative to what I don't really know what the harsh and condemnatory exhortation not the demand to accept and uphold a moral code noteworthy only for its joylessness, sterility, and tendency to forbidden damn. Something like that. I hate it. I really hate this passage here. They can offer an alternative to the cynical and bitter view that our social and political institutions are unreliable, corrupt, and untrustworthy. They can offer an alternative to the joyless and sterile drive to forbid and damn others. Right? Which is better than whatever the fuck he was saying there. And then, instead, the confident, forthright transmission of the abandoned eternal verities to all those who currently wander, thirst, and starve in their absence. The abandoned eternal verities. Oh, Jesus. Verities. I'm just looking up exactly what he means by that. Verities, plural noun, a true principle or belief, especially one of fundamental importance. Okay. So what he wants to say is a belief, right? Traditional values. Can offer don't like verities. It's just, I mean, what he's trying to get back to these principles, right? Do you remember the principles up here somewhere? Where did he mention them? Well, he mentioned principles up here somewhere. Principles that guided and stabilized the West. Remember? Key idea. Let's go back to those. Traditional values can offer eternal principles to those who are currently starved of them. Right. New paragraph. So it goes, what can those who hold traditional values offer in such times? They can offer an alternative to the cynical and bitter view that our social and political institutions are unreliable, corrupt and untrustworthy. They can offer an alternative to the joyless and sterile drive to forbid and damn others. Traditional values can offer eternal principles to those who are currently starved of them. And okay, maybe I've cut out a lot of what he was saying, but what he was saying was complete fucking guff, wasn't it? So yes, I think I'm happy with mine. Maybe I've made it a bit plainer, but I feel like mine is just better, right? So let us carry on. My gosh. What are the values of paramount importance to the conservative temperament currently crying out? Who writes like this? I just don't understand. Children write better than this. What are the values of paramount importance to the conservative temperament currently crying out for a discovery? What are these traditional values? Shut up, you twat. I mean, what is all of that? You've already established that people are starved of them up here, right? We don't need all of this padding. What are these traditional values? An inevitably incomplete but crucially necessary list. Crucially necessary. An inevitably inevitably incomplete but crucially unnecessary. Inexhaustive. Be careful with the word inexhaustive. Does it actually mean it's opposite? A funny word like that. Inexhaustive means, yes, not thorough, not complete. That's what he wants to say, is inexhaustive, right? An inexhaustive list. And here the adjective is necessary because he's trying to establish that there's other stuff you might add to this, right? So I see what he's trying to do, but you could get there in one word, inexhaustive. And you could say, well, the word inexhaustive may not be that accessible to, you know, joke blogs, but like, look at all the shit he's written up here. So, you know, I think we can get away with inexhaustive, right? An inexhaustive list might include humility, liberty, autonomy, truth, agency, identity, merit, responsibility, tradition, community, stewardship, justice, and unity. Okay. Fine. To that list might be profitably appended. Twat. Set of propositions about the true nature and source of absolute privation. The inevitability of economic inequality. The practical realities of the individual competence upon which psychological integrity and social contract equally and mutually depend. We might add true nature and source of absolute privation. The real causes of poverty, I think that's what he's trying to say. the inevitability of economic equality. Practical realities of the individual competence upon which the psychological integrity and social contract equally and mutually depend. Sorry for the dead air. I'm just trying to process what this sentence is trying to, what this part of the sentence is trying to get at. The practical realities of the individual competence. Whose individual competence? Upon which psychological integrity, whose psychological integrity? And social contract equally and mutually depend. Oh, I don't know. And the fact that our society depends on with competence, something like that. Is that what he's trying to say? Help me out, chat. What is he trying to say? I'm having a look at chat to see if they understand. Is that what he's trying to say? Yes. Okay, let's just leave it there. So, an inexhaustible, right, what are these traditional values? An inexhaustive list might include humility, liberty, autonomy, truth, agency, identity, merit, responsibility, tradition, community, stewardship, justice, and unity. We might add the real causes of poverty, the inequality, the inevitability of economic inequality, and the fact that our society depends on people with competence. I think that gets across what he was trying to say in a way that makes sense to 99% of people. Okay, let's carry on. All right, here now he starts going through each of the things he lists. My gosh, I might give up on this soon. I mean, we're 3 pages in an hour and 20 minutes. It is like a field of rocks, as somebody said. It is just mental. All right. Humility. This is his definition of humility. Humility is the opposite of the prideful, authoritarian arrogance that insists upon the possession of comprehensive and final skill and knowledge. Humility is the opposite of pride and arrogance. Something like this, he wants to say. Humility is the opposite of pride, arrogance, and hubris. To revere humility is to accept the insufficiency of the current presumption, what current presumption? What current presumption? You haven't established what that is. You've established that there are people who have pride, who are prideful and authoritarian and arrogant and so on. You have not established that this is the current situation. To revere humility is to accept the insufficiency of the current presumption. Current presumption. current presumption. To revere humility is to accept that, there are things we do not know. I think that's what he wants to say. To acknowledge the value of attending to what is not yet known. Listen to, value, and attempt to truly understand the opinions of others, no matter how ill-informed. Okay. Then, like, truly... I think I'll leave that go. To listen to and value, to listen to, value, and attempt to truly understand. If you're valuing them and you're listening to them already, I'm going to say to value and attempt to understand the opinions of others, no matter how ill-informed. Strive to gain further knowledge and to convince and invite instead of insisting on and compelling. Okay. Humility is therefore a fundamental precondition for learning, for the revivifying, Humility is therefore Humility is therefore a precondition for learning, for the revivifying, meaningful engagement that learning produces. Okay. The revivifying, meaningful engagement. This engagement is meaningful and it revivifies you at the same time, is what he's saying. And for the maintenance and renovation of what has already been validly learned, established, and universally valued. Learning produces meaningful engagement. What does he mean by revivifying? What the fuck are you talking about? And for the maintenance and renovation maintains Let's see what we end up with here. Humility is the opposite of pride, arrogance, and hubris. To revere humility is to accept that there are things that we do not know. To value and attempt to understand the opinions of others, no matter how ill-informed. To strive to gain further knowledge. And to convince and invite instead of insisting and compelling. Humility is therefore a precondition for learning. Learning produces meaningful engagement and maintains knowledge. Something like that. Fucking hell. Liberty. Liberty is valuable, not because it enables the hedonism that heedlessly sacrifices the future and the community to the narrowly conceptualized present and the impulsive needs and wants of the individual. Okay, well... This sentence needs to complete its thought, right? If you're establishing what liberty is not, the sentence has to then go on to say what it is. But he doesn't do that. He ends the sentence there. And he then says, liberty is valuable because it allows all three free and unique people the opportunity to best confront the potential of the future, to engage in the voluntary, productive, reciprocal interactions that make peaceful, mutually sustaining social life possible, to speak the truth that redeems and renews, and to adopt the responsibility of citizenship and ethical endeavor. Fucking hell. Liberty is valuable not because it enables. Shut up. I say liberty does not mean hedonism. Something like that. Liberty is valuable because it allows free and unique people the opportunity to best confront the potential of the future, to engage in voluntary, productive, reciprocal interactions that make peaceful, mutually sustaining social life possible. Free and unique people liberty is valuable because it allows people the opportunity to best confront the potential of the future, to engage in the voluntary, productive, reciprocal interactions that make peaceful, mutually sustaining social life possible. Speak the truth that redeems and renews. Shut up. And to adopt the responsibility of citizenship and ethical endeavor. I think we can just about get away with that sentence. It's one of his better ones. Not saying much. Liberty enables people to think authentically and without arbitrary constraints, privately and publicly. Okay, yeah. Liberty allows people to employ that unconstrained, authentic thought just fucking shut up. Liberty allows people to imagine a diverse set of possibilities, singly and jointly assess, criticize, and improve them. I don't know what all these words are doing in here. Why does he have to say singly and jointly? To assess, criticize, prioritize, and improve them, and to choose from those diverse, criticized and improved possibilities. There. What he wants is the word there, not from those diverse, criticized, and improved possibilities, the most evidently valuable. Just shut up. Right, okay. So let's see what we end up with. Liberty does not mean hedonism. Liberty is valuable because it allows people the opportunity to best confront the potential of the future, to engage in the voluntary, productive, reciprocal interactions that make peaceful, mutually sustaining social life possible, to speak the truth and to adopt the responsibility of citizenship and ethical endeavor. Liberty enables people to think authentically and without arbitrary constraints, privately and publicly. Liberty allows people to imagine a diverse set of possibilities, to assess, criticize, prioritize, and improve them, and to choose the path forward. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! Thanks, everyone. Thanks, everyone. Bloody hell. People are saying the first clause is still too wordy, but I mean, there's nothing technically wrong with it. And by Peterson standards, it's one of his better sentences, that. So, oh, I don't know how much more of this I can take. How many super chats have I got? Okay, there are a few super chats as well. So, remember, everybody, buy Foundations of Writing, ladies and gentlemen. I'm gonna need a sip of my coffee. I mean, I need to take a break. So I'm going to play the Merit ad and drink my coffee. 25% off Foundations of Writing. I'll be back in a minute.
Merit, pure merit, such merit. 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 Merit, such merit.
Oh, sorry, I just needed to take a little time out there to drink my coffee. All right, let's carry on. Autonomy. The emergent problems that constantly beset us and simultaneously offer new opportunities can only be addressed by the continual provision. What is this sort of writing? There's no people. It's just like abstract ideas floating around, doing stuff to each other. You know, what's the subject of the sentence? What's the verb? What the fuck is going on here? The emergent problems, right? The emergent problems. Okay, that is the subject that constantly beset us. And technically, it's that whole clause, subclause there. This is the whole part. That's the subject. The emergent problems that constantly beset us. Oh, and simultaneously offer new opportunities, right? That's the subject. Can only be addressed. That's the verb. By the continual provision of equally unpredictable and variable set of solutions. Sorry for the dead air. I'm just... What's he saying? What's he saying? Problems require solutions. Is that what he's saying? Such solutions, such provision is best ensured by valuing and encouraging development of the widest range of productive activities and enterprises from which variation might be drawn, the most appropriate solutions. It is best that solutions are drawn from a wide range of productive activities and enterprises. It is best that solutions are drawn from a wide range of productive activities and enterprises. A wide range of productive activities and enterprises use best solutions. Problems require solutions. A wide range of productive activities and enterprises produce the best solutions. Produces the best solutions. Problems require solutions. A wide range of productive enterprises and activities and enterprises produces the best solutions. I don't like it. Best solutions come from a wide range of productive activities and enterprises. Is that better? Something like that. Problems require solutions. The best solutions come from a wide range of productive activities and enterprises. Are we happy with that? Yes. Okay. Autonomous citizens can bring the individual differences of their temperament, experience, and skill to bear on the problem of adaptation itself. Adaptation. Okay. Autonomous people and institutions, as widely distributed as possible, are free to vary in their response to the particularized demands of their local environments. Autonomous citizens can bring the individual differences of their temperament, experience, and skill to bear on the problem of adaptation itself. What's the problem of adaptation then? People with different skills, different temperaments, experiences, and skills help solve problems. What is he saying? Is that what he's saying in a nutshell? Press one if you agree that that's what he's saying, basically. Yeah, he's saying that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Autonomous people and institutions, as widely distributed as possible, are free to vary in their response to the particularized demands of their local environments. Autonomous people and institutions, as widely distributed as possible, are free to vary in their response to the particularized demands of their local environments. With autonomy, they should be free to provide solutions to the particular problems of their environments. From the variant pool, all individuals... What the fuck is the variant pool? The variant pool. All individuals free to communicate and assess can derive the solutions most apt and efficiently matched to their current situations and problems. Doesn't need it. I've already said it. Widely distributed autonomous local activities allow for the establishment of resilient, large-scale unified systems optimally resilient to the rapid and dangerous spread of any given unpredictable emergent problem, optimally able to respond with timely and particularized solutions. I may stop after this paragraph because it's getting me down. Well, he's clearly very keen on the distributed nature of the individuals. Widely distributed autonomous local activities, okay, allow for the establishment he's talking about the division of labor, is he? What's he talking about? Widely distributed autonomous local activities allow for the establishment of resilient, large-scale, unified systems, optimally resilient to the rapid and dangerous spread of any given unpredictable emergent problem, optimally able to respond with timely and particularized solutions. The principle of autonomy therefore enables the abundant provision in relation to the necessities and luxuries of life. Goes down here. Gordon Bennett. Let's just bring that up here a minute. Hold on. Let's turn track changes off a minute. Bring that text up here if we can. Right. And track changes on again. Okay, so widely distributed autonomous local activities allow for the establishment. Optimally resistant to the rapid and dangerous spread of any unpredictable emergent problem. Trying to get my head around what he's trying to get at here. People with different skills and temperaments can help solve problems with autonomy. With autonomy, they should be free to provide solutions to the problems of their local environments. Factor activities give rise to resilient, large-scale, unified systems. which can respond to new problems rapidly. Just shut up. I hate this man. I really do. Is that what he's trying to say, right? People with different temperaments, experiences, and skills can help solve problems. With autonomy, they should be free to provide solutions to the problems of their local environments. Such activities give rise to resilient, large-scale, unified systems which can respond to new problems rapidly. The principle of autonomy, therefore, enables abundant provision in relation to the necessities and luxuries of life. Autonomy, therefore, provides us with necessities, luxuries of life. Maximal choice regarding the manner in which that provision should occur, and diverse opportunities for meaningful, sustaining engagement in the voluntary, productive. Do not want free markets. I just think there's just scuff. He's not saying anything. Free markets best fulfill the need for autonomy, local activity, and wide distribution. Their superiority to all other known and likely possible systems, given that fulfillment, should be unapologetically recognized and promoted by those dedicated to the canonical values of the West. Free markets best fulfill the need for autonomy, local activity, and wide distribution. Free markets do this best. Those who hold traditional values, those who hold the traditional values of the West should defend free markets. You twat. I really am running out of patience with this because it's just horrible. No other systems allow for the crucial and ever-changing decisions about what is currently valuable to be made by the uncompelled choice and voluntary endeavor of the widest possible number of people. This distributed thing he's getting at up here, which I've basically cut out, is division. He's talking about division of labor, right? That's really what he's trying to get at in this passage. And I feel like I've cut it out too much. So I'm going to say here, this gives rise to the division of labor. I'm not inserting that. I think that's genuinely what he's trying to get at, right? And that's really, it's not such activities, it's the division of labor. It's the division of labor which is doing it. This gives rise to the division of labor. Which produces resilient, large-scale, unified systems that can respond. And respond to new problems rapidly. Autonomy, therefore, provides us with the necessities and luxuries of life. Free markets do this best. I'll just say, because they facilitate division of labor. I'm not inserting this. I just think that that is what he's trying to get at, in a nutshell, knowing my free market economics as I do. That's basically this distribution. That's what he means, division of labor. Those who hold the traditional values of the West should defend free markets. No other systems allow for the crucial and ever-changing decisions about what is currently valuable to be made by the uncompelled choice of the voluntary endeavor of the widest number of people. No other systems allow for the crucial and ever-changing decisions about what is currently valuable to be made by choices of individuals. No other systems allow for the crucial and ever-changing decisions about what is currently valuable No other systems allow for the crucial and ever-changing decisions about what is currently No other systems can respond as rapidly to the changing needs and tastes of individuals. No other system allow for the sampling and aggregation of the myriad of widely varying and particularized thoughts and decisions. Oh, just fucking shut up. No other system, therefore, does and can apparently operate in a manner that makes continued adaptation. Just shut up. Right. Okay. It's all summed up in this sentence. No other systems can respond as rapidly to the changing needs and tastes of individuals. End. Fucking hell. Oh. So, we end up with this for autonomy. This, I think this was the worst paragraph yet, which is saying something. Problems require solutions. The best problems come from a wide range of productive activities and enterprises. Known as the division of labor, maybe. Maybe that's what you're trying to get at. People with different temperaments, experiences, and skills can help solve problems. With autonomy, they should be free to provide solutions to the problems of the local environment. This gives rise to the vision of labor. It produces resilient, large-scale, unified systems that can respond to new problems rapidly. Autonomy, therefore, provides us with the necessities and luxuries of life. Free markets do this best because they facilitate the division of labor. Those who hold the traditional values of the West should defend free markets. No other system can respond as rapidly to the changing needs and tastes of individuals. End. What a shit show. Oh. Yeah. Let's do one more paragraph on truth, and then I think we'll do the super chats and I'll have a bit of a rest before I speak to Lambda. I may do a part two, seeing how people feel. If they really want a part two, we can get to the end. But This is 15 pages long, guys, and we're on page 3, and we're 2 hours in. This is, I would say, worse than about 75. This would be like in the bottom, like 15% of all the essays I've ever marked. It's fucking atrocious. It's fucking atrocious. Good Lord help us if this is a top professor. So yeah, people can, I'll put in a thing if people can vote for part two, right? You can vote for part two. That doesn't necessarily mean it will happen, but we can vote. But I can't, I mean, you can tell this is stressing me out a little bit. It's kind of hard going, you know? So you guys can vote if you want a part two, and we'll do it again. I don't know about next week, but we'll just do it again at some point, okay? So I'll save this document. Look, I'll save my version of it here. Truth. The future genuinely and unpredictably differs from the past. In consequence, a continual array of complex and unforeseen problems array themselves before us, demanding redress. I want to go with the idea of problems and solutions, which we've established up here. I think in the long run, it will flow better if we frame it as problems which require solutions. This is basically the Peterson mindset, even though he doesn't want to use those words for some reason. A diverse, honest, and freely exchanged range of thoughts pertaining to those problems is the eternal precondition for the possibility of solution itself, as well as for its dissemination. Such solutions require free thought. There are many valid, productive, and attractive ways at looking at and acting in the world, and a variety of perspectives is simultaneously necessary, strategically appropriate, and inevitable. Solutions benefit from considering a variety of perspectives. When you take out all the rubbish, he is talking. The actual substance of what he's saying is very, very weak source, by the way, as an aside. He's basically just, this is just platitudes, basically. You know, no shit, sir. Problems require solutions. It's better if people have free thought to come up with them, and we should talk to a number of different people to take in their different views on how to come up with them. Brilliant. Give that man a Nobel Prize. It is also forever the case, however, the disciplined striving in a single direction fortifies and unifies. An ethic capable of uniting diverse citizens in trust and peace is necessary and desirable, and the truth itself is never to be found in a particular sect of facts or body of knowledge. It is also forever the case that discipline striving in a single direction fortifies and unifies, that an ethic capable of uniting diverse citizens in trust and peace is necessary and desirable, and that truth itself is never to be found in a particular set of fact or body of knowledge. I think I'm going to leave that sentence as it stands, leave it or not. I feel like it's one of his, you know, it's, again, not the sentence I would ever write, but I'm going to leave it stand. The genuine striving forward ethically, instead, is the very embodiment of truth, and therefore most valuable manifestation of truth itself. What are you talking about? Truth is never to be found in a set of facts or a body of knowledge. The genuine striving forward, ethically, instead, is the very body... Okay, so it's not the search for knowledge or facts. Instead, it's this disciplined single direction that provides truth. Is that right? It's necessary and desirable to go forward in a single direction that can unite diverse citizens. I think that's what he's trying to say. Diverse citizens must be unified by striving in a single direction towards a common end. I think that's what he's trying to say. Truth itself, I'll do it over here. Truth itself is never to be found in a particular set of facts or body of knowledge. Fine. Genuine striving forward towards common end. Instead, the very embodiment of truth. Is it though? And therefore, the most valid manifestation of truth itself. Huh? Is he really saying that truth is to be found in the fact that diverse citizens must strive towards a single end, common goal? Is he really saying that? So I'm going mad here, folks. Is he really saying this? Surely Peterson does not mean that this is true. Sadie reckons he is saying that. Yeah. Okay. Truth itself is never to be found in a particular set of body or of facts. The genuine striving forwards towards the common end, instead, is the very embodiment of truth, and therefore the most valid manifestation of truth itself. Don't need that second part, do you? Because you've just, if it's the embodiment of truth, it's obviously the most valid manifestation, you twat. Oh. Tautologies, Peterson. The humble attempt to advance ourselves and others through discourse. The consequence of listening and spontaneous response is, instead, the very embodiment of truth. The embodiment of truth, right, comes from listening and responding to other people. What if the other person's wrong, though? Here I stand in front of a glass of water. This person believes it's a glass of piss. I argue with that person and we find the truth, do we? What the fuck are you saying? willingness to reach in, I just don't understand what he's trying to say. The willingness to reach in good faith across the divides of race, sex, and economic class and political temperament is instead the very embodiment of truth. What are you talking about? What if the people of the other race, other sex, other economic class are saying stuff that is demonstrably wrong, you twat? Sorry, this isn't meant to be about the style and not the content. What is he saying? Right, so truth isn't actually whatever is true. Truth is diverse people all striving towards a common goal. Right. And if it doesn't matter if the end goal is true or not, what matters is that we're trying to reach across that divide of race, sex, and economic class and so on. That's the embodiment of truth, according to Dr. P here. Okay, let's leave that sentence as is then. Mental. He is more far gone than you can possibly imagine, this man. Just what a... Just... The divisive insistence on the absolute relativity of truth be combated not least with the realization that truth is a process and not a state. You've just told us that the embodiment of truth is the willingness to reach good faith across divides of race, sex, and economic class. So how can it be a process? You've just defined it as the striving towards a common end among diverse peoples. If that is the embodiment of truth, it's not a process, is it? This is confused. It's not just confusing me. Peterson himself is confused in this passage, because what he's talking about is a definition of truth that is that kind of locates truth in the process, if that makes any sense. So therefore it is a state and not a process, because the process is itself a state. I'll just leave that sentence as it is, even though I think it contradicts everything he said up above here. The realization, finally, that the adventure of life we find precisely in pursuit of the truth. But you've just defined truth, the true meaning of truth, as diverse citizens being united by a single goal. You've just said it's not found in a body of fact or a body of knowledge. You've said the embodiment of truth is the striving... is the striving forward. The realization, finally, that the adventure of life is to be found precisely in the pursuit of truth constitutes the only real antidote to the corrupt. I mean, I know what he's talking about, right? He is trying to talk about the scientific process, right? The kind of discovery process of the scientific method. But if that's what you mean, fucking say it. Don't define truth as diverse citizens striving towards a single common goal, and then have the audacity to talk about absolute relativity, halfway down the passage. Just say, the truth is to be found through the scientific method. But I don't think you... So he's just said, though, that the truth is not to be found there. It's never to be found in a particular set of fact or body of knowledge. I honestly, he's lost me in this passage. I don't know what he's talking about. This is not clear, and I cannot rescue it. I'm going to have to leave the contradictions in there because I don't know what he's saying. I honestly don't. The realization, finally, that the adventure of life is to be found precisely in the pursuit of the truth constitutes the only real antidote to the corrosive nihilism that justifies deception, hopelessness, cynicism, and abdication of responsibility. So the only thing, according to Dr. P, that combats nihilism is joining together with diverse citizens across the divides of race, sex, economic class, and so on, to come together in good faith to find the truth. That's the only thing that can give us meaning in life, according to Dr. P. Is that right? I'll just leave it as it stands. I can't rescue it. I can't rescue it. Truth offers the antidote to the corrosive nihilism. Justifies deception, hopelessness, cynicism, and the abdication of responsibility. Most fundamental freedoms the suit of truth. Most fundamental freedoms upon which virtuous states and polities depend, freedom of speech and thought foremost above them, exist not for the impulsive gratification of momentary pleasures, but so that the truth that redeems can find its living expression. Let's fuck all that. I just don't know what he's saying. So, what are we left with? The future differs from the past. In consequence, a continual array of complex, unforeseen problems array themselves before us, demanding new solutions. Such solutions require free thought. Solutions benefit from considering a variety of perspectives. Diverse citizens must be unified by striving in a single direction towards a common end. Truth itself is never to be found in a particular sect of facts or body of knowledge. The genuine striving forward towards the common end instead is the very embodiment of truth. The willingness to reach in good faith across the divides of race, sex, economic class, and political temperament is instead the very embodiment of truth. The divisive insistence on the absolute relativity of truth can be combated, not least with the realization that the truth is a process and not a state. The pursuit of truth offers the antidote to the corrosive nihilism that justifies deception, hopelessness, cynicism, and abdication of responsibility. End. All right. That'll do for today, friends. This is just absolute gobbledygook. Even I couldn't make sense of that last one. There's another 13 or so pages of this to go. 78% of people want a part two. We will do it again at some point. You can buy Foundations of Writing, promo code MERIT. That is only available just for this one stream, by the way. It's just a kind of limited time thing, so get it while get it while you can. It won't be available if you watch this tomorrow or whatever. It's just available right now, promo code Merit. And I will be back on Luke's channel in a bit. Lambda Conversations. I think, yes, I'll be talking about postmodernism. He currently has Aaron McIntyre on there. So I will drop the link in the show notes in a moment. But I will be... yeah, let me do the super chats and then we'll then I'll drop the link and see you guys in half an hour. Adam E says, joined late. My apologies. For the second paragraph, I would say careless intellectuals have usurped one value set for another, in which case you can't say they are careless as they now have intention. yeah, good point, Adam E. Narco Republican says, the idea that doesn't convince in 20 lines does not triumph in 2,000 pages. Truth convinces with a wink. Error needs discourses. Nicolas Gomez de Villa. Thank you very much for that. It rings true. Boss Grand says, AA, did you know that Peterson is working on a word editor with his son? You too can write as incoherently as Peterson soon. Thank you for all the effort that went into this. Keep up the great work, and I've been enjoying your solo streams. Well, thank you very much, Boss Grand. It means so much. I mean, maybe Peterson will see this and it will wake him up to the fact that he can't write for Toffee. I mean, I doubt it. I don't think he's got the humility that he talks about to recognize the fact that a lot of his sentences don't make sense. Or they're verbose and convoluted to the point where you kind of give up halfway through. I mean, maybe I'll post my version of the first three pages online. After this, I'll accept all the changes and people can show him like what a clear version of his text looks like. I think one of the reasons people write like this is because they're not actually that secure in their ideas, right? And so they're not thinking clearly. So they use all this gubbins to hide behind the fact they're not really saying anything. And I think some of my rewrites make that clear. It really makes it clear that he's not saying much at all. So let's carry on. Sam153 says, for the pain, AA, top deep lore, for sure. Well, thank you very much, Sam153. It means so much. Spasticus Autisticus says, what mark would you give this essay? And what feedback would you give to the student who handed this in? I would give it a very low mark. And I would just say, you need to learn how to write again. I would say that the lack of clarity in your sentence structure is seriously hampering your overall thesis. I just don't know what he's talking about half the time because you have to struggle through the molasses of his sentence construction. So I would say something like that, but I'd probably try to write it in a way that wasn't as harsh as that. Hunger says, I would not wish editing Peterson's manifesto on even my worst enemies. You're doing the Lord's work, AA. Well, thank you very much, Hunger. Narco Republican says, here, GBP, persuaded of romantically dating an idea in the palace. We used to wake up next to common truism in a brothel. Sam153 says, suggestion, AA, maybe do a part two of rewriting to calm the nerves. Yes, indeed. I was getting very agitated towards the end, as you could probably tell. He also says, another point, this dissection really puts some light, Peterson's thought process, jumbled as it is. Yeah, I mean, I think that section on truth is fundamentally confused and really doesn't make a lot of sense when you really start thinking, like, what are you saying in each of the sentences? And I would actually encourage, this is why I think Foundations of Writing in particular is the number one course to get out of all of my courses. Because if you can do what I've just done there, the whole process of trying to make sense of what someone else is saying by converting it into legible English basically means that you understand what their argument is, right? And I think the process of doing that showed that in his truth section, at the very least, Peterson is, he's trying to argue two different things, really. He, on the one hand, he's trying to argue for this kind of united ethical goal. On the other hand, he's trying to argue for something like scientific method, right? And it just got so jumbled up that by the end, you don't really know what he's talking about, right? People throw around words like pseudo-intellectual, like willy-nilly, like somebody says, oh, you call yourself an academic, you're a pseudo-intellectual. But I think what I've tried to do on this stream is to really show you this Conservative Manifesto is a pseudo-intellectual work because it's not clear. It's not logically structured. It tries to hide its ideas behind a wall, like a smoke screen of verbosity. That's what he's doing most of the time. I don't know if he's doing that on purpose or if he's doing it because he's not quite sure of what he's saying. Spasticus Autisticus says, now I can see that why you've been putting this off, AA. Yes. I knew it would be a grind. GB says, I hope this helps with the pain of dealing with that gobbledygook. Well, thank you very much, GB. James Carter says, I'm one paragraph in, and I've already decided this is a top 10 deepest lore episode, and I know my deepest lore. Well, thank you very much, James Carter. Lambda Conversation says, I've been looking forward to this rewrite stream. Don't miss out on my Lambda Conversation streams tonight. Big guest list with Stephen Wolfe, Aura McIntyre, Academic Agent, Frody, Ed Dutton, Sargon, Charlemagne, AIU, and Semiagog. Yes, and directly after the stream, I'll be going to his stream and I'll drop the link in the show notes. Clear Them Out says, this is for the Bowie Deepest Laws. Well, thank you very much. John Boy says, in recognition of your courage in attempting this task, thank you very much. Benjamin Rood says, BS, 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 therefore I need an editor. Indeed. And believe it or not, Benjamin Rood, I'm not the best editor in the world, right? I need an editor, believe it or not, right? So, I mean, Lord knows for Peterson. Benjamin Rood says, BS, 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 therefore Pakistani Scottish PMs are white. That's what Peterson was saying on Twitter. Sadie Labonte says, utilizing nebulous and obscurantist verbosity to obfuscate the banality of his pontification, concoctment with morphological incoherence and scatterbrained contemplation, Peterson fails to persuade. Yes, indeed, Sadie. It's just an ABC in awful, awful writing. Really awful writing. Karen Took the Kid says, I'm all for buying courses and supporting the value you're creating. I am curious as to how this document would be corrected by ChatGPT. Do you think you'd spot errors or learn something new or both? I don't really know about, I don't really understand the ChatGPT thing. I would like to imagine that the ChatGPT could not do as good a job as I have done. But then again, it may, who knows? I don't know. I'd be interested to see what it did. And then we can compare. I'll put mine up, my corrected version. And you could run the ChatGPT on the first three pages and see and compare them, you know, and that would be the proof, I suppose. Camelot Crusader says, I regret learning to read. Benjamin Rood says, BS, 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 therefore I tautologize. Big Nig 420, Big Nig is back. Hello, sir. He says, cigar stream idea, the Taliban's rise to power through the lens of our elite theory. I wouldn't mind looking at the Taliban. That would take a bit of research, though. Benjamin Rood says, BS, 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 it means so much. Yes. And Molo Thalma says, that nonsense at the end was an attempt at discourse ethics a la Habermas. The original is already wank, and Peterson evidently didn't get it anyway. Well, thank you very much for that, Molo Thalma. I had an idea that it's something I wasn't, you know, I spotted what he was doing with the economic part straight away, but what he was talking about there, I don't know. I'm not happy with his definition of truth, by the way. It seems wrong, but there we are. I mean, simply striving towards a common goal is not the truth, I'm afraid. Sadie Labanti says, the strange irony is that Peterson often used to lecture on the importance of good writing as a necessary skill for clear thinking. Yeah, it is very strange that somebody who used to say that can't actually write. But, you know, maybe it's a consequence of the division of labor. I put a lot of time and effort into learning how to write. He put all of his into studying brains or whatever he does, studying Jungian psychology and archetypes, or that's what his field is, right? But it's a good demonstration of the fact that even world famous academics can't write, and Jordan Peterson's one of them. Karen Took the Kid says, I can imagine Professor AA stamping a big F on this paper and then writing the C word in magic marker on a random page. it's bad. All right. Well, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, promo code MERIT. I'll leave it up, for the rest of today. But if you try to do it, let's say if you watch this stream tomorrow or whatever, you could try the code, but I've only put a few in there and they'll run out basically. So, get it while you can. All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I will post the stream. I've put it in the link for the Tabbers. So if you want to catch me on Luke's channel, I've put the link in there in the chat. So click on that. You can watch our one until I arrive. He's talking about leap theory, a very important topic. And I will see you in half an hour.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.